305, verse 23. Therefore Yahuwah God sent him forth from the Garden of Eden to till the ground from which he was taken. To be cast out of the Garden of Eden is to be deprived of all intelligence and wisdom. And to till the ground from which he was taken is to become corporeal, as he was previous to regeneration. That to be cast out of the Garden of Eden is to be deprived of all intelligence and wisdom is evident from the signification of a garden and of Eden, as above. For a garden signifies intelligence or the understanding of truth, and Eden, being significative of love, signifies wisdom or the will of good. That to till the ground from which he was taken signifies to become corporeal, such as he was before regeneration, has been shown above, verse 19, where similar words occur. 306, verse 24. And he cast out the man, and he made to dwell from the east toward the Garden of Eden cherubim, and the flame of a sword turning itself to keep the way of the tree of lives. To cast out the man is to entirely deprive him of all the will of good and understanding of truth, insomuch that he is separated from them and is no longer man. To make to dwell cherubim from the east is to provide against his entering into any secret thing of faith. For the east toward the Garden of Eden is the celestial, from which is intelligence. And by cherubim is signified the providence of the Lord in preventing such a man from entering into the things of faith. By the flame of a sword turning itself is signified self-love with its insane desires and consequent persuasions, which are such that he indeed wishes to enter, but is carried away to corporeal and earthly things, and this for the purpose of keeping the way of the tree of lives, that is, of preventing the profanation of holy things. 307. It here treats of the sixth and seventh posterities which perished by the flood, and were altogether cast out of the Garden of Eden, that is, from all understanding of truth, and became, as it were, not men, being left to their insane lusts and persuasions. 308. As the signification of the East and of the Garden of Eden were given above, it is needless to dwell longer on them. But that cherubim denote the providence of the Lord lest man should insanely enter into the mysteries of faith from his proprium, and from what is of the senses and from scientifics, and should thus profane them and destroy himself, is evident from all the passages in the Word where mention is made of cherubim. As the Jews were of such a quality that if they had possessed any clear knowledge concerning the Lord's coming, concerning the representatives or types of the church as being significative of him, concerning the life after death, concerning the interior man and the internal sense of the Word, they would have profaned it and would have perished eternally. Therefore this was represented by the cherubim on the mercy seat over the ark, upon the curtains of the tabernacle, upon the veil, and also in the temple. And it was signified that the Lord had them in keeping. Exodus 25, verses 18 to 21. 26 verses 1 and 31. First Book of Kings 6 verses 23 to 29 and 32. For the ark in which was the testimony signified the same as the tree of lives in this passage, namely the Lord and the celestial things which belong solely to him. Hence also the Lord is so often called the God of Israel sitting on the cherubim, And hence he spake with Moses and Aaron between the cherubim. Exodus 25, verse 22. Numbers 7, verse 89. This is plainly described in Ezekiel, where it is said, "The glory of the God of Israel was uplifted from upon the cherub whereon he was, to the threshold of the house. And he called to the man clothed with linen, and said unto him, Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men who groan and sigh for all the abominations done in the midst thereof. And to the others he said, Go ye after him through the city, and smite. Let not your eye spare, neither have ye pity. Slay to blotting out the old man, and the young man, and the virgin, the infant, and the women. Defile the house, and fill the courts with the slain." 9 verses 3 to 7. And again, "He said to the man clothed in linen, Go in between the wheel to beneath the cherub, and fill thy palms with coals of fire from beneath the cherubim, and scatter them over the city. The cherub put forth his hand from between the cherubim unto the fire which was between the cherubim, and took thereof, and put it into the palms of him that was clothed in linen, who took it and went out." 10 verses 2 and 7. From these passages it is evident that the providence of the Lord in preventing men from entering into the mysteries of faith is signified by the cherubim, and that therefore they were left to their insane lusts, here also signified by the fire that was to be scattered over the city, and that none should be spared. 309. That by the flame of a sword turning itself is signified self-love with its insane lusts and persuasions, which are such that they desire to enter into the mysteries of faith, but are carried away to corporeal and earthly things, might be confirmed by so many passages from the Word as would fill pages. But we will cite only these from Ezekiel. "Prophesy and say, Thus saith Yahuwah, Say a sword, it is sharpened, and also burnished to make a sore slaughter. It is sharpened, that it may be as lightning. Let the sword be doubled the third time, the sword of his slain, the sword of a great slaughter, which entereth into their bedchambers, that their heart may melt, and their offences be multiplied. I have set the terror of the sword in all their gates. Alas, it is made as lightning." 21 verses 9, 10, 14, and 15. A sword here signifies the desolation of man such that he sees nothing that is good and true, but mere falsities and things contrary, denoted by multiplying offences. It is also said in Nahum of those who desire to enter into the mysteries of faith, "The horseman mounting, and the flame of the sword, and the flash of the spear, and a multitude of the slain." 3 verse 3. 310. Each particular expression in this verse involves so many arcana of deepest import applicable to the genius of this people who perished by the flood, a genius totally different from that of those who lived subsequent to the flood, that it is impossible to set them forth. We will briefly observe that their first parents, who constituted the most ancient church, were celestial men, and consequently had celestial seeds implanted in them, whence their descendants had seed in them from a celestial origin. Seed from a celestial origin is such that love rules the whole mind and makes it one. For the human mind consists of two parts, the will and the understanding. Love or good belongs to the will, faith or truth to the understanding. And from love or good, those most ancient people perceived what belongs to faith or truth, so that their mind was one. With the posterity of such a race, seed of the same celestial origin necessarily remains, so that any falling away from truth and good on their part is most perilous, since their whole mind becomes so perverted as to render a restoration in the other life scarcely possible. It is otherwise with those who do not possess celestial but only spiritual seed, as did the people after the flood, and as also do the people of the present day. There is no love in these, consequently no will of good, but still there is a capability of faith or understanding of truth, by means of which they can be brought to a certain charity, although by a different way, namely by the insinuation of conscience from the Lord, grounded in the cognitions of truth and the derivative good. Their state is therefore quite different from that of the antediluvians, concerning which state of the Lord's divine mercy we will treat hereafter. These are arcana with which the present generation are utterly unacquainted. For at the present day, none knows what the celestial man is, nor even what the spiritual man is, and still less what is the quality of the human mind and life thence resulting, and the consequent state after death. 311. In the other life, the state of those who perished by the flood is such that they cannot be in the world of spirits or with other spirits, but are in a hell separated from the hells of others, and as it were under a certain mountain. This appears as an intervening mountain in consequence of their direful fantasies and persuasions. Their fantasies and persuasions are such as to produce so profound a stupor in other spirits that they do not know whether they are alive or dead, for they deprive them of all understanding of truth, so that they perceive nothing. Such also was their persuasive power during their abode in the world. And because it was foreseen that in the other life they would be incapable of associating with other spirits without inducing on them a kind of death, they all became extinct. And the Lord of His divine mercy induced other states on those who lived after the flood. 312. In this verse, the state of these antediluvians is fully described, in that they were cast out or separated from celestial good, and in that cherubim were placed from the east toward the Garden of Eden. This expression, from the east toward the Garden of Eden, is applicable only to them, and could not be used in relation to those who lived afterwards, of whom it would have been said, from the Garden of Eden toward the east. In like manner, had the words, the flame of a sword turning itself, been applied to the people of the present day, they would have been the sword of a flame turning itself. Nor would it have been said, the tree of lives, but the tree of life, not to mention other things in this series that cannot possibly be explained, being understood only by the angels to whom the Lord reveals them. For every state contains infinite arcana, not even one of which is known to men. 313. From what is here said of the first man, it is evident that all the hereditary evil existing at the present day did not come from him, as is falsely supposed. For it is the most ancient church that is here treated of under the name of man. And when it is called Adam, it signifies that man was from the ground, or that from being non-man he became man by regeneration from the Lord. This is the origin and signification of the name. But as to hereditary evil, the case is this. Everyone who commits actual sin thereby induces on himself a nature, and the evil from it is implanted in his children and becomes hereditary. It thus descends from every parent, from the father, grandfather, great-grandfather, and their ancestors in succession, and is thus multiplied and augmented in each descending posterity, remaining with each person and being increased in each by his actual sins, and never being dissipated so as to become harmless except in those who are being regenerated by the Lord. Every attentive observer may see evidence of this truth in the fact that the evil inclinations of parents remain visibly in their children, so that one family and even an entire race may be thereby distinguished from every other. Continuation concerning man's entrance into eternal life. Number 314. After the use of light has been given to the resuscitated person or soul so that he can look about him, the spiritual angels previously spoken of render him all the kindly services he can desire in that state and give him information about the things of the other life, but only so far as he is able to receive it. If he has been in faith and desires it, they show him the wonderful and magnificent things of heaven. 315. But if the resuscitated person or soul is not of such a character as to be willing to be instructed, he then desires to be rid of the company of the angels, which they exquisitely perceive. For in the other life there is a communication of all the ideas of thought. Still, they do not leave him even then, but he dissociates himself from them. The angels love everyone and desire nothing more than to render him kindly services, to instruct him, and to convey him to heaven. In this consists their highest delight. 316. When the soul thus associates himself, he is received by good spirits, who likewise render him all kind offices while he is in their company. If, however, his life in the world has been such that he cannot remain in the company of the good, he desires to be rid of these also. And this process is repeated again and again, until he associates himself with those who are in full agreement with his former life in the world, among whom he finds, as it were, his own life. And then, wonderful to say, he leads with them a life like that which he had lived when in the body. But after sinking back into such a life, he makes a new beginning of life. And some after a longer time, some after a shorter, are from this borne on towards hell. But such as have been in faith towards the Lord are from that new beginning of life led step by step towards heaven. 317. Some, however, advance more slowly towards heaven and others more quickly. I have seen some who were elevated to heaven immediately after death, of which I am permitted to mention only two instances. 318. A certain spirit came and discoursed with me, who, as was evident from certain signs, had only lately died. At first he knew not where he was, supposing himself still to be in the world. But when he became conscious that he was in the other life, and that he no longer possessed anything, such as house, wealth, and the like, being in another kingdom where he was deprived of all he had possessed in the world, He was seized with anxiety, and knew not where to betake himself or whither to go for a place of abode. He was then informed that the Lord alone provides for him and for all, and was left to himself, that his thoughts might take their wonted direction as in the world. He now considered, for in the other life the thoughts of all may be plainly perceived, what he must do, being deprived of all means of subsistence. And while in this state of anxiety, he was brought into association with some celestial spirits who belonged to the province of the heart, and who showed him every attention that he could desire. This being done, he was again left to himself, and began to think from charity how he might repay kindness so great, from which it was evident that while he had lived in the body, he had been in the charity of faith, and he was therefore at once taken up into heaven. 319. I saw another also, who was immediately translated into heaven by the angels, and was accepted by the Lord and shown the glory of heaven, not to mention much other experience respecting others who were conveyed to heaven after some lapse of time. 4. On the nature of the life of the soul or spirit. 320. With regard to the general subject of the life of souls, that is, of novitiate spirits after death, I may state that much experience has shown that when a man comes into the other life, he is not aware that he is in that life, but supposes that he is still in this world, and even that he is still in the body. So much is this the case that when told he is a spirit, wonder and amazement possess him, both because he finds himself exactly like a man in his senses, desires, and thoughts, and because during his life in this world he had not believed in the existence of the spirit, or, as the case with some, that the spirit could be what he now finds it to be. 321. A second general fact is that a spirit enjoys much more excellent sensitive faculties and far superior powers of thinking and speaking than when living in the body, so that the two states scarcely admit of comparison, although spirits are not aware of this until gifted with reflection by the Lord. 322. Beware of the false notion that spirits do not possess far more exquisite sensations than during the life of the body. I know the contrary by experience repeated thousands of times. Should any be unwilling to believe this in consequence of their preconceived ideas concerning the nature of spirit, let them learn it by their own experience when they come into the other life, where it will compel them to believe. In the first place, spirits have sight, for they live in the light, and good spirits, angelic spirits, and angels, in a light so great that the noonday light of this world can hardly be compared to it. The light in which they dwell and by which they see will, of the Lord's divine mercy, be described hereafter. Spirits also have hearing so exquisite that the hearing of the body cannot be compared to it. For years they have spoken to me almost continually, but their speech also will, of the Lord's divine mercy, be described hereafter. They have also the sense of smell, which also will, of the Lord's divine mercy, be treated of hereafter. They have a most exquisite sense of touch, whence come the pains and torments endured in hell. For all sensations have relation to the touch, of which they are merely diversities and varieties. They have desires and affections to which those they had in the body cannot be compared, concerning which of the Lord's divine mercy more will be said hereafter. Spirits think with much more clearness and distinctness than they had thought during their life in the body. There are more things contained within a single idea of their thought than in 1,000 of the ideas they had possessed in this world. They speak together with so much acuteness, subtlety, sagacity, and distinctness, that if a man could perceive anything of it, it would excite his astonishment. In short, they possess everything that men possess, but in a more perfect manner, except the flesh and bones and the attendant imperfections. They acknowledge and perceive that even while they lived in the body, it was the spirit that sensated, and that although the faculty of sensation manifested itself in the body, still it was not of the body. And therefore that when the body is cast aside, the sensations are far more exquisite and perfect. Life consists in the exercise of sensation, for without it there is no life, and such as is the faculty of sensation, such is the life, a fact that anyone may observe. 323. At the end of the chapter, several examples will be given of those who, during their abode in this world, had thought otherwise. Chapter 4, verse 1. And the man knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man, Vir, Yehovah. 2. And she added to bear his brother Abel. And Abel was a shepherd of the flock, and Cain was a tiller of the ground. 3. And at the end of days it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering to Yehovah. 4. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And Yehovah looked to Abel and to his offering. 5. And unto Cain and unto his offering he looked not. And Cain's anger was kindled exceedingly, and his faces fell. 6. And Yehovah said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth? And why are thy faces fallen? 7. If thou doest well, art thou not exalted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. And to thee is his desire, and thou rulest over him. 8. And Cain talked to Abel his brother. And it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him. 9. And Yehovah said to Cain, Where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? 10. And he said, What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth to me from the ground. 11. And now art thou cursed from the ground, which hath opened its mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand. 12. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee its strength. A fugitive and a wanderer shalt thou be in the earth. 13. And Cain said unto Yehovah, Mine iniquity is greater than can be taken away. 14. Behold, thou hast cast me out this day from the faces of the ground, and from thy faces shall I be hid, and I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer in the earth. And it shall come to pass that every one that findeth me shall slay me. 15. And Yehovah said unto him, Therefore whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And Yehovah set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should smite him. 16. And Cain went out from the faces of Yahweh, and dwelt in the land of Nod toward the east of Eden. 17. And Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bare Enoch. And he was building a city, and called the name of the city after the name of his son, Enoch. 18. And unto Enoch was born Irad. And Irad begat Mehujael. And Mehujael begat Methusael. And Methusael begat Lamech. 19. And Lamech took unto him two wives. The name of the one was Adah, and the name of the other Zillah. 20. And Adah bare Jabal. He was the father of the dweller in tents and of cattle. 21. And his brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of everyone that playeth upon the harp and organ. 22. And Zillah, she also bare Tubal-Cain, an instructor of every artificer in brass and iron. And the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. 23. And Lamech said unto his wives, Adah and Zillah, Hear my voice, ye wives of Lamech, and with your ears perceive my speech. For I have slain a man to my wounding, and a little one to my hurt. 24. If Cain shall be avenged sevenfold, truly Lamech 70 and sevenfold. 25. And the man knew his wife again, and she bare a son, and called his name Seth. For God hath appointed me another seed instead of Abel, for Cain slew him. 26. And to Seth, to him also there was born a son, and he called his name Enosh. Then began they to call upon the name of Yahweh. The Contents, number 324. Doctrines separated from the church, or heresies, are here treated of, and a new church that was afterwards raised up, called Enosh. 325. The most ancient church had faith in the Lord through love, but there arose some who separated faith from love. The doctrine of faith separated from love was called Cain. And charity, which is love towards the neighbor, was called Abel. Verses 1 and 2. 326. The worship of each is described, that of faith separated from love, by the offering of Cain, and that of charity by the offering of Abel. Verses 3 and 4. That worship from charity was acceptable, but not worship from separated faith, verses 4 and 5. 327. That the state of those who were of separated faith became evil is described by Cain's anger being kindled and his countenance falling, verses 5 and 6. 328. And that the quality of the faith is known from the charity, and that charity wishes to be with faith if faith is not made the chief thing and is not exalted above charity. Verse 7. 329. That charity was extinguished in those who separated faith and set it before charity is described by Cain slaying his brother Abel. Verses 8 and 9. 330. Charity extinguished is called the voice of bloods. Verse 10. Perverted doctrine, the curse from the ground. Verse 11. The falsity and evil originating thence, the fugitive and wanderer in the earth. Verse 12. And as they had averted themselves from the Lord, they were in danger of eternal death. Verses 13 and 14. But as it was through faith that charity would afterwards be implanted, faith was made inviolable. And this is signified by the mark set upon Cain. Verse 15. And its removal from its former position is denoted by Cain dwelling toward the east of Eden. Verse 16. 3:31. The amplification of this heresy is called Enoch. Verse 17. 3:32. The heresies that sprang from this one are also called by their names, in the last of which, called Lamech, there was nothing of faith remaining. Verse 18. 3:33. A new church then arose, which is meant by Ada and Zillah, and is described by their sons Jabal, Jubal, and Tubal-Cain. The celestial things of the church by Jabal, the spiritual by Jubal, and the natural by Tubal-Cain. Verses 19-22. 3:34. That this church arose when everything of faith and charity was extinguished, and had violence done to it, which was in the highest degree sacrilegious, is described verses 23 and 24. 3:35. A summary of the subject is given, that after faith, signified by Cain, had extinguished charity, a new faith was given by the Lord, whereby charity was implanted. This faith is called Seth. Verse 25. 3:36. The charity implanted by faith is called Enosh, or another man, Homo, which is the name of that church. Verse 26. The internal sense, number 3:37. As this chapter treats of the degeneration of the most ancient church, or the falsification of its doctrine, and consequently of its heresies and sects, under the name of Cain and his descendants, it is to be observed that there is no possibility of understanding how doctrine was falsified, or what was the nature of the heresies and sects of that church, unless the nature of the true church be rightly understood. Enough has been said above concerning the most ancient church, showing that it was a celestial man, and that it acknowledged no other faith than that of love to the Lord and love towards the neighbor. Through this love they had faith from the Lord, or a perception of all the things that belong to faith, and for this reason they were unwilling to mention faith, lest it should be separated from love, as was shown above, number 200 and 203. Such is the celestial man, and such he is described by representatives in David, where the Lord is spoken of as the king, and the celestial man as the king's son. Give the king thy judgments and thy righteousness to the king's son. The mountains shall bring peace to the people, and the hills in righteousness. They shall fear thee with the sun, and towards the faces of the moon, generation of generations. In his days shall the righteous flourish, and abundance of peace until there be no moon. 72 verses 1, 3, 5, and 7. By the sun is signified love, by the moon, faith. By mountains and hills, the most ancient church. By generation of generations, the churches after the flood. Until there be no moon, is said because faith shall be love. See also what is said in Isaiah 30, verse 26. Such was the most ancient church, and such was its doctrine. But the case is far different at this day, for now faith takes precedence of charity. But still through faith, charity is given by the Lord, and then charity becomes the chief thing. It follows from this that in the most ancient time, doctrine was falsified when they made confession of faith, and thus separated it from love. Those who falsified doctrine in this way, or separated faith from love, or made confession of faith alone, were then called Cain. And such a thing was then regarded as an enormity. 338, verse 1. And the man knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man, vir Yehovah. By the man and Eve his wife is signified the most ancient church, as has been made known. Its first offspring, or firstborn, is faith, which is here called Cain. Her saying, I have gotten a man, Yehovah, signifies that with those called Cain, faith was recognized and acknowledged as a thing by itself. 339. In the three foregoing chapters, it has been sufficiently shown that by the man and his wife is signified the most ancient church, so that it cannot be doubted. And this being admitted, it is evident that the conception and the birth effected by that church were of the nature we have indicated. It was customary with the most ancient people to give names, and by names to signify things, and thus frame a genealogy. For the things of the church are related to each other in this way, one being conceived and born of another, as in generation. Hence it is common in the word to call things of the church conceptions, births, offspring, infants, little ones, sons, daughters, young men, and so on. The prophetical parts of the word abound in such expressions. 340. That the words, I have gotten a man, Yehovah, signify that with such as are called Cain, faith is recognized and acknowledged as a thing by itself, is evident from what was said at the beginning of this chapter. Previously, they had been, as it were, ignorant of what faith is, because they had a perception of all things of faith. But when they began to make a distinct doctrine of faith, they took the things they had a perception of and reduced them into doctrine, calling it, I have gotten a man, Yehovah, as if they had found out something new. And thus what was before inscribed on the heart became a scientific. In the ancient times they gave every new thing a name, and in this way set forth the things involved in the names. Thus the signification of the name Ishmael is explained by the saying, Yehovah hath heard her affliction. Genesis 16, verse 11. That of Reuben by the expression, Yehovah hath looked upon my affliction. Genesis 29, verse 32. The name Simeon by the saying, Yehovah hath heard that I was less dear. Genesis 29, verse 33. And that of Judah by, This time will I praise Yehovah. Verse 35. And an altar built by Moses was called Yehovah my banner. Exodus 17, verse 15. In like manner, the doctrine of faith is here denominated, I have gotten a man, Yehovah, or Cain. 341, verse 2. And she added to bear his brother Abel. And Abel was a shepherd of the flock, and Cain was a tiller of the ground. The second offspring of the church is charity, signified by Abel and brother. A shepherd of the flock denotes one who exercises the good of charity, and a tiller of the ground is one who is devoid of charity, however much he may be in faith separated from love, which is no faith. 342. That the second offspring of the church is charity is evident from the fact that the church conceives and brings forth nothing but faith and charity. The same is signified by the first children of Leah from Jacob, Reuben denoting faith, Simeon faith in act, and Levi charity. Genesis 29, verses 32, 33, and 34. Wherefore also the tribe of Levi received the priesthood and represented the shepherd of the flock. As charity is the second offspring of the church, it is called brother and is named Abel. 343. That a shepherd of the flock is one who exercises the good of charity must be obvious to everyone, for this is a familiar figure in the word of both Old and New Testaments. He who leads and teaches is called a shepherd, and those who are led and taught are called the flock. He who does not lead to the good of charity and teach it is not a true shepherd. And he who is not led to good and does not learn what is good is not of the flock. It is scarcely necessary to confirm this signification of shepherd and flock by quotations from the word. But the following passages may be cited. In Isaiah, the Lord shall give the rain of thy seed, wherewith thou sowest the ground, the bread of the increase of the ground. In that day shall he feed thy cattle in a broad meadow. 30:23. Here, bread of the increase of the ground denotes charity. Again, the Lord Yahweh shall feed his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs into his arms and carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those that are with young. 40:11. In David, give ear, O shepherd of Israel, thou that leadest Joseph like a flock, thou that sittest on the cherubim, shine forth. Psalm 80:1. In Jeremiah, I have likened the daughter of Zion to a comely and delicate woman. The shepherds and their flocks shall come unto her. They shall pitch tents near her round about. They shall feed every one in his own space. 6:2-3. In Ezekiel, thus saith the Lord Yahweh, I will multiply them as a flock of man, as a hallowed flock, as the flock of Jerusalem in her appointed times. So shall the waste cities be filled with the flock of man. 36:37-38. In Isaiah, all the flocks of Arabia shall be gathered together unto thee. The rams of Nebaioth shall minister unto thee. 60:7. Those who lead the flock to the good of charity are those who gather the flock, but those who do not lead them to the good of charity scatter the flock. For all gathering together and union are of charity, and all dispersion and disunion are from lack of charity. 344. What avails faith, that is, the science, cognition, and the doctrine of faith, but that the man may become such as faith teaches? And the primary thing that it teaches is charity. Mark 12:28-35. Matthew 22:34-39. This is the end of all it has in view. And if this be not attained, what is all science or doctrine but a mere empty nothing? 345. That a tiller of the ground is one who is devoid of charity, however much he may be in faith separated from love, which is no faith, is evident from what follows. That Yahuwah had no respect to his offering, and that he slew his brother, that is, destroyed charity, signified by Abel. Those were said to till the ground who look to bodily and earthly things, as is evident from what is said in Genesis 3, verses 19 and 23, where we read that the man was cast out of the Garden of Eden to till the ground. 346, verse 3. And at the end of days it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering to Yahuwah. By the end of days is meant in process of time. By the fruit of the ground, the works of faith without charity. And by an offering to Yahuwah, worship thence derived. 347. That by the end of days is signified in process of time is evident to all. At first, and while there was simplicity in it, the doctrine here called Cain does not appear to have been so unacceptable as it became afterwards, as is evident from the fact that they called their offspring a man Yahuwah. Thus at first faith was not so far separated from love as at the end of days or in process of time, as is wont to be the case with every doctrine of true faith. 348. That by the fruit of the ground are meant the works of faith without charity appears also from what follows. For the works of faith devoid of charity are works of no faith, being in themselves dead, for they are solely of the external man. Of such it is written in Jeremiah. Wherefore doth the way of the wicked prosper? Thou hast planted them, they also have taken root. They have gone on, they also bear fruit. Thou art near in their mouth, and far from their reins. How long shall the land mourn, and the herb of every field wither? 12, verses 1, 2, and 4. Near in the mouth, but far from the reins, denotes those who are of faith separated from charity, concerning whom it is said that the land mourns. In the same prophet, such works are called the fruit of works. The heart is deceitful above all things, and it is desperately wicked. Who can know it? I, Yahuwah, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give to every man according to his ways, and according to the fruit of his works. Jeremiah 17, verses 9 and 10. In Micah, the land shall be desolate because of them that dwell therein, for the fruit of their works. 7, verse 13. That such fruit is no fruit, or that the work is dead, and that both fruit and root perish, is thus declared in Amos. I destroyed the Amorite before them, whose height was like the height of the cedars, and he was strong as the oaks. Yet I destroyed his fruit from above, and his roots from beneath. 2, verse 9. And in David, their fruit shalt thou destroy from the earth, and their seed from the sons of man. Psalm 21, verse 10. But the works of charity are living, And of them it is declared that they take root downward and bear fruit upward, as in Isaiah. The remnant that has escaped of the house of Judah shall again take root downward and bear fruit upward. 37 verse 31. To bear fruit upward is to act from charity. Such fruit is called the fruit of excellence in the same prophet. In that day shall the shoot of Yahuwah be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the earth excellent and comely for them that are escaped of Israel. Isaiah 4, verse 2. It is also the fruit of salvation, and is so called by the same prophet. Drop down, ye heavens, from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. Let the earth open, and let them bring forth the fruit of salvation. And let righteousness spring up together. I, Yahuwah, will create it. Isaiah 45, verse 8. 349. That by an offering is meant worship is evident from the representatives of the Jewish church, in which sacrifices of every kind, as well as the first fruits of the earth and of all its produce, and the oblation of the firstborn, were called offerings, in which their worship consisted. And as they all represented celestial things, and all had reference to the Lord, it must be obvious to everyone that true worship was signified by these offerings. For what is a representative without the things it represents? Or what is an external religion without an internal, but a kind of idol and a thing of death? The external has life from things internal, that is, through these from the Lord. From these considerations it is evident that all the offerings of a representative church signify the worship of the Lord. And concerning these of the Lord's divine mercy, we shall treat in particular in the following pages. That by offerings in general is meant worship is evident in the prophets throughout, as in Malachi. Who shall abide the day of his coming? He shall sit as a refiner and purifier of silver. And he shall purify the sons of Levi, and purge them as gold and silver. And they shall offer unto Yahuwah an offering in righteousness. Then shall the offering of Judah and of Jerusalem be pleasant unto Yahuwah, as in the days of eternity, and as in ancient years. 3 verses 2, 3, and 4. An offering in righteousness is an internal offering, which the sons of Levi, that is, holy worshippers, will offer. The days of eternity signify the most ancient church, and the ancient years the ancient church. In Ezekiel, in the mountain of my holiness, in the mountain of the height of Israel, there shall all the house of Israel, all that land, worship me. There will I accept them, and there will I require your oblations, and the first fruits of your offerings in all your sanctifyings. 20 verse 40. Oblations and the first fruits of the offerings in the sanctifyings are likewise works sanctified by charity from the Lord. In Zephaniah, from beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, my suppliants shall bring mine offering. 3 verse 10. Ethiopia denotes those who are in possession of celestial things, which are love, charity, and the works of charity.